Tonight in Philadelphia, where the game time temperature is forecast to be about 40 degrees with a wind chill about 10 degrees colder. They'll pick up where they left off Monday evening when rain suspended play with the game tied 2-2 after 5.5 innings. The Indiana Stadium and Convention Building Authority says the RCA Dome will come down on Saturday, the Saturday before Christmas. What's left of the former home of the Indianapolis Colts, which is already being dismantled, will be imploded December 20th, and the area will be used for an expansion of the Indiana Convention Center. The Colts now play in nearby Lucas Oil Stadium. There are a dozen games on the second night of the NBA's 2008-2009 campaign, including the Thunder's debut in Oklahoma City against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Thunder relocated from Seattle during the offseason. And former Eastern Illinois University basketball and golf coach Robert Carey has died at the age of 88. He was head basketball coach from 1953 through 1964, and he led the 1957 basketball team at Eastern to the NAIA semifinals. Carey also coached the Panthers golf team from 1954 to 1977. That's a look at sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Pages for All Ages Books, Music, Cafe, and DVDs, a locally owned independent bookstore offering books, compact discs, stationery, magazines, DVDs, and gifts since 1988. In Savoy or available on the web at www.pagesforallages.com.
California voters are going to be asked to decide whether farm animals deserve bigger cages and bigger crates in the upcoming election. Proponents say the current conditions amount to animal cruelty. Some farmers are complaining. They say the measure is going to damage California's egg industry and set a precedent for other states. From member station KQED, Sasha Coca reports.
Supporters of California's Prop 2 say its message is simple. Pigs, veal calves, hens, and other farm animals shouldn't be cruelly confined in spaces barely larger than their bodies.
The animals should be allowed to stand up, lie down, turn around, and extend their limbs. That's all.
Wayne Pacelli is executive director of the Humane Society of the United States, a major funder of the Yes on 2 campaign.
If we crammed 8 or 10 people into an elevator to the point where they couldn't walk, they could barely turn around, we would think that was a form of torture. Yet on factory farms in this country, animals are being tortured in this way.
The Humane Society has backed similar ballot measures in Arizona and Florida, where pork and veal producers are now phasing out certain kinds of crates and cages. But since California doesn't produce much veal or pork, opponents of Prop 2 say this measure is a test case aimed at one sector, the egg industry. California is the fifth largest egg producer in the nation, and egg farmers here say the initiative will drive them out of business. This giant hen house near Modesto is home to 115,000 white leghorn hens with bright red combs and wattles. They live in long rows of stacked metal cages. Their necks poke out from between the bars as they squawk and flutter. J.S. West & Company houses 1.5 million birds. Each one has a job, to lay an egg a day. Jill Benson heads up the operation.
We know our hens are content because they lay a lot of eggs. Stressed out hens don't lay eggs.
Right now, neither California nor federal rules regulate the size of hens' cages. Like most California egg farmers, Benson follows standards set by the United Egg Producers and Industry Group. They require a minimum of 67 square inches of floor space per hen. That's less than the space covered by a piece of letter-sized paper. Benson says since their water's in the front of the cage and their food in the back, each hen is obviously able to turn around.
And as you can see, she can stand up, sit down, turn around, walk around, and flap her wings.
But Prop 2 requires egg-laying hens to be able to fully spread both wings without touching the sides of a cage or another hen.
It comes down to space requirements. A bird's wingspan is about 28 inches, and for her to have that space and not touch another bird or an enclosure would require massive amounts of land.
Prop 2, Benson says, would force her not just to buy bigger cages, but to let her hens run cage-free and expose them to more feces and disease. a much bigger problem in the cage-free industry. Plus, cage-free eggs are more expensive to produce. A recent study from the University of California, Davis, agrees, predicting that if Prop 2 passes, egg producers here won't be able to compete with low-cost eggs coming from other states and Mexico. Early field polls show strong support for the measure. If it passes, California farmers will have 6 years to adapt to new regulations or face fines or even jail time. And animal rights activists are already gearing up to sponsor similar initiatives in other egg-producing states. For NPR News, I'm Sasha Coca.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Next month, November, marks American Music Month at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. It's the fifth annual American Music Month at the U of I, and this year's celebration looks to be a great one. The SUSE Archives and Center for American Music are hosts. Events include concerts, lectures, master classes, and exhibitions. This year's theme is tied to the Lincoln Bicentennial, Lincoln and His Music, Melodies That Move the Man and the Nation. Scott Schwartz is Associate Professor of Library Administration and Archivist for the SUSE Archives and Center for American Music at the University. He joins me to share with us some of the highlights of American Music Month. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, Celeste. Great to be back.
One of the highlights has to be the concert of Anthony Brown's Asian American Jazz Orchestra. Tell us about them.
Oh, that's great. Anthony and I go back a long time. We worked together at the Smithsonian. He's the creator of Fifth Stream Jazz, and he brings Eastern and Western instruments and cultures together to play jazz, in essence. The works of Duke Ellington, Thelonious Monk, and George Gershwin, to say just a few. And it's music where the tunes are familiar, but the arrangements are so fresh that it actually gives you a new perspective on those great works, particularly the works of Ellington's Far East Suite. It's stupendous kind of music.
Yeah, what do you say we give the listeners a taste?
Oh, excellent.
Okay, what should we play?
Let's play Isfahan, one of his favorites.
Okay. So what is it here that they're doing with this piece by Strayhorn?
Basically, you know, they're doing a new take on it. It's hard to hear some of the Asian instruments that he's incorporated into the effect, but he's building right off of Johnny Hodges' solo. It just makes the piece stand out. Of course, Johnny has long since gone, but he's retained that flavor that Johnny brought to the tune and then bringing in new instruments in the background. Not quite as obvious in this particular excerpt here, but just classic Ellington with a new twist.
Yeah. Well, what are they going to perform when they come to Krannert on November 6th? They'll be performing at the Krannert Center.
Well, basically Thelonious Monk's Moods piece. It starts off with a Chinese hammer dulcimer lick. It playing basically what Thelonious played on the piano. And because Monk had such a love of Eastern culture and reflect that in much of his music, having these Asian instruments as part of that bring it out. And the hammered dulcimer is phenomenal. And when I hear the work played on the hammered dulcimer, I have a new interpretation of the work and, quite frankly, enjoy it more than I do the original recording that was done years ago. They use the arhu, the two-string Chinese violin, in part of that work, and also in the Gershwin Rhapsodies. And you have to kind of shut your ears off to the traditional sounds you're used to, particularly with Gershwin, and, you know, come at the sound with a fresh mindset, and it becomes quite exciting. And many times the Asian instrumentalists bring out some of those qualities that, you know, both Monk and Gershwin were attempting to pull out in with Western instruments in a way that I think presents it much better.
Okay. Now, are tickets available for this performance?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yep.
Okay.
Tickets are available. $14 to $30 at the Krenner Center for Performing Arts.
Okay. Later in the month, later next month, on the 21st, the venue is the Virginia Theater. Granny's Porch. Now, this is truly a community effort, isn't it? Who's taking part?
Oh, it's excellent. We have, of course, Robin Cureton's Bodacious String Band. The kids play every year, and they will actually start out the program with some dance music, Southwind. And it'll be followed by Jordan Kay of the Prairie Dogs playing and singing some of the tunes of the 19th century. The Boston Blue-Eyed Boy, I believe, is one of the tunes he'll start out with, a tune that was very commonly sung. We have the Springfield 10th Volunteer Cavalry Band playing Civil War instruments. They're actually going to do two pieces, Lincoln's Second Inaugural March by Francis Maria Scala and the Mary Todd Polka. And then we'll be joined by Robin Cureton's Oberon the Possum King in a joint string venture after they play Colored Aristocracy to kind of give a view of the barn dance and breakout type styles associated with barn dancing. They'll join together to play two unique works that really begin to reflect the crossover of string music and brass music. And I'm not going to tell you what the surprise is at that point.
Okay.
It will just catch you off guard.
Okay, and for tickets there, you want to get in touch with the Virginia.
That's right.
Okay, now, from Granny's Porch to a grand ball
very
next day. And I know you're really excited about this event as well, because the last time we talked, we talked a little bit about this when we had Vernon Burton on the show.
Oh, yeah. And the grand ball is, in essence, we call it From Ballroom to Barn Dance. It'll start out as a formal 19th century ball, typical of the time that Lincoln would have experienced. And we have our 10th Cavalry Band playing much of the music that Lincoln heard and expected to hear at these balls. And we have Deborah Hyland from St. Louis coming in to help kind of steer people on the dance floor if you've never done ballroom dancing before. She's just stupendous in terms of that. And then halfway through, we're going to transition from ballroom dancing to barn dancing. And we have Paul Tyler and Lynn Chirp Smith, who will basically be joined by some colleagues from the local community to do fiddling tunes of that time. And Paul will actually do the calling of a barn dance. So the ladies will actually drop the hoops from their skirts if they come dressed in costume and join us in a barn dance.
Okay, so we'll get to listen to the music. We'll also be able to participate, it sounds like, mm-hmm. and then also we'll get an idea of the dress and the manners.
Oh,
of
yes,
this time.
Yes. It's an opportunity to really dive into the 19th century for a couple hours.
And where's the venue for that, and where do we get tickets to that event?
That's at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, and you can basically call Vicki at the center and purchase your tickets. She can also help with the afternoon lectures that are associated with that. We have Paul and Deborah Hyland talking about social etiquette in the ballroom, etiquette and practice in the barn dance setting. These all following Vernon's lecture earlier in the morning, and all of those tickets and luncheon all can be purchased through the Alumni Association.
Okay, very good. Now, exhibitions are also a part of American Music Month, and there are a couple that I'm really intrigued by, and so I'll ask you to talk with us about them a little bit. One features a look at early sound recording.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we think about sound recordings as those iPods and computers and DVDs, and quite frankly, in the 19th century, they were wax and then plastic cylinders and occasionally shellac platters. And we have the technology to play much of these historical recordings, and it gives you an opportunity to actually see the machines operate and hear the sounds that your grandparents, your great-grandparents would have heard in the early 19th century. So living music, living history, all in one space.
Okay, and that's at the Sousa Archives and the Center for American Music, which is on campus. And then the other interesting exhibition that I thought I'd like to check out is in the library, the University Library Marshall Gallery, Music, Humor, and Office Mischief, Political Cartooning.
Yeah, that's Paul Byerly. I mean, Paul Byerly is the leading scholar of Sousa. I mean, if you want to know anything about Sousa, you read one of his many books. Well, working in the aerospace industry, he basically took up cartooning to kind of express himself regarding the typical bureaucratic things you run into in big government agencies and industries. And so you have these wonderful cartoons of life in the office, everything from the 1970s coffee embargo, and you know, he drawing a cartoon about the coffee machine robbing your wallet, or, for example, new music coming out of something other than a tuba. Since Paul was a tubist, they kind of expected him to play that, and yet he's making, you know, music out of something out. So you get a different take on Paul Byerly and a life that we often don't associate with him. And he was an engineer, first and foremost, and a scholar and musician secondary.
Okay. We've got to wrap it up here because we're out of time, but where will we find a complete schedule?
Well, if you go to any website and type in Sousa Archives and just click on the front page, and quite frankly, it'll give you a listing of the entire sets of events.
Okay. November marks American Music Month at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And my thanks this afternoon to Scott Schwartz, Associate Professor of Library Administration and Archivist for the Sousa Archives and the Center for American Music at the U of I.
Earth and Sky.
David Dinges, a scientist working with the National Space Biomedical Research Institute, is developing a test to help astronauts in space gauge their own stress and fatigue.
Well, it's remarkably simple. You would pull up on the computer the test, and up would come a series of questions, very short ones, asking you basically what are the conditions of today. Did you sleep last night? Have you had any space motion sickness? How tired are you now?
The test would measure how quickly astronauts push a button in response to a light flashing on a computer screen.
You just do that test for 3 minutes, then you get a final score that says, here's your percentage score on where you are compared to alert, capable astronauts.
This simple test could help astronauts gauge their fitness for performing critical tasks, like docking their ship to a space station